All right, here we go. We're in week two. We're in week two of this series. It's broken up a little bit just by the calendar. It's a little three-part mini-series. We usually do, if you're visiting with us, we try to do a series on giving and stewardship at the beginning of every year. And so we're in that. It's broken up by the calendar. I'm not going to come back and finish it up until the week after next on the 23rd. I think something important is happening next week, but it escapes my mind. No, I'm just kidding. Come on, our oldest is getting married next weekend. So good. Rob Shepherd, one of my dear friends, is going to be preaching here. So I'm telling you, if you're visiting with us, make sure you don't want to miss next week because Rob is awesome. He likes to say of other people, "You're full of awesome." If you know Rob, right? That's one of his favorite sayings. Rob Shepherd is full of awesome. Can we just agree on that? He's full of awesome. So last week I started. There's a new name that's going to pop up here. Because we're talking about this idea of how do you say certain names. If you remember 2 weeks ago, it was C-H-E-R-Y-L, and how some people say that with two syllables, but if you grew up in the country like me, it's just one. It's Cheryl, right? It's not even one, it's a half of a syllable. So the following week, Vanessa and I were having a conversation, and after 27 years of blissful marriage, I realized, as much as she makes fun of me for saying Cheryl, right, she doesn't know how to say this name, right? L-A-U-R-A, right? How do you say that name, honey? Laura. Now, there's Lori, but then there is Laura. You with me? It's not spelled L-O-R-A, Laura. It's Laura. Anybody with me? Thank you. Are there any Lauras that are out there? Yes. Yes, we have a witness. How do you say your name? Say that one more time. Wait a minute.
Laura.
Come on. So good. Right? Right. We all have these words that we say, and depending on where we grow up, depending on how we hear other people say them, right? It dictates. And it determines our pronunciation. Can we just agree? The same thing happens with our lives, right? Our actions have a voice. Our actions say something. And the question of this series, while we're having fun with these names, is the question of, am I mispronouncing Christian stewardship by the way that I live? And in fact, this is the question I'm challenging all of us to wrestle with. When God listens to how I manage my money, right, when he's listening to the way that I live through my finances, through how I spend and how I give and how I budget and how I consume and share, with that, right? He's listening. Is he in heaven saying to me, "Hey, Fred, you're not saying that right"? Is he observing my life and saying, "Hey, Fred, I think you're mispronouncing that"? And the difference between Cheryl and Sheryl and Laura and Laura is that those are preferences, right? We're not saying, we're having fun with it, that anyone is necessarily right or anyone is necessarily wrong. But when God looks at us and says, "Hey, you're not saying that right," then it's no longer about preference. There's something in my life that has to bend, right? That has to yield to how God says I should say that. It's funny, at this pastor mentor program that I'm a part of, we were at Fredericksburg for a couple of weeks. My friend Cheryl, otherwise known as Cheryl, who's a dear friend of ours, she's one of the campus pastors at the new campus of Freedom Life Church in Norfolk. She's part of this program too, and she had a part in one of the sessions. And the lady Amy Kimball is there too. She's a part of the cohort this year. And the lady who went to call Cheryl up said, "Hey, Cheryl's going to come now." Said it just like I said, right? Now, she's from South Carolina, but she's been in Toronto, Canada for the last 10 years, and she still hasn't lost that Southern accent. So as soon as she said Cheryl, right, Amy did this, because I was sitting there, Amy went with this big grin on her face, like, it's everywhere. We can't get away from it. So it was so good. She was participating in our service, and she didn't even know it. I've entitled this series, A Sacred Sacrifice, because I believe those two words are an essential part of what Christian stewardship is about. It's about investing in a work that is sacred, and it's investing in that work to a degree that it is sacrificial, right? It's investing in a work that is sacred, but then doing it in a way that it is sacrificial, meaning that I feel it. You can be a Christian who is financially responsible, but still not be practicing fully Christian stewardship. It's more than just being good with your money. It's being willing to ask yourself the question, is this money that I have and the resources that I have, am I using them the way that God intended? A couple of weeks ago, I gave you these two thoughts. Am I giving sacrificially to the sacred work of building Jesus' church? Because if I'm not giving sacrificially to the sacred work of building Jesus' church, then in my opinion, I think, then we're mispronouncing Christian stewardship by the way we are managing our money. This work of building Jesus' church is sacred. It was one of Jesus' declarative statements as to why he came. He said, I came to build my church and the gates of hell would not prevail against it. And then all throughout the rest of his time on earth and then moving into the first century church, what we find are groups of people that were committed to give sacrificially to this sacred work, which is one of the reasons why we're here today. Can we agree on that? 2,000 years later, because people were practicing what we're talking about doing. I shared this slide with you a couple of weeks ago, these four blanks, and this is what we're saying. If you call City Life Church your home, if City Life Church isn't your home and you're visiting, then you should be doing this for your church, right? Wherever you call home. But if you have a church that you call home, at the beginning of every year, you should be writing down these four things. Now, depending on your church, you might have less blanks, you might have more. For us as a church, we have these four. One is your monthly tithe. That's what percentage of your income are you setting aside to give to the church that you call home? There should be a percentage there. I'm going to talk to you tonight. I don't think we're going to have time to do all of them. But there's six total questions. I was going to do three tonight and then three in 2 weeks. We'll see how far we get. But there's six common questions that I've gotten over my life of 25 years of pastoral ministry where it come up in conversation about the biblical practice of tithing. And so we're going to dig into those a little bit. But I believe in the biblical principle of tithing. For me, as an individual, we practice that as a family. We give 10% of our gross annual income to the church. Then we have a monthly missions commitment. There's an amount that we budget for us. We say every month, above our tithe, we're going to give this to the work of missions. All the money that goes to missions here at City Life Church goes right back out the door, 100% of us. For us this year, we're going to give an additional 2% of our gross annual income. Then we have an annual missions pledge. This is something by faith. We're asking everybody who calls City Life Church home to do all these things. Is that God is going to give you a monetary figure. You're not going to budget for it. And then you believe by faith he's going to provide it. And then when he does, you give it to the work of mission. So we have a monthly commitment. Then we have a missions pledge. The first one I plan for. The second one I plan for. The third one is based on faith. For us, we're believing God for an extra month of tithe we're going to give to missions. Now, for us as a church, we always have those three. And I introduced to you a few weeks ago at our annual business meeting, there's a new one that we're going to add this year. We want to raise $40,000 this year for this facility. This facility was donated to us. It's a miracle. In May of 2019, I tell people all the time, it came to us debt-free. It did not come expense-free, right? And so there's a long list of projects that we are going to commit ourselves to this year, taking care of this facility. And I'm asking you to join me in it. We made our gift to the Legacy Fund just on Friday. And so our church, we're believing God for this number over the next 6 months. There's an $80,000 upgrade that needs to happen in this space for the air conditioner unit. We're not trying to raise all the money that we're going to spend because we have cash reserves. We have a building fund that we invest in every year. And so we're asking you to partner with us to replenish some of those reserves. So it's a total of $130,000 that we're going to spend this year on this building. $80,000 for the Sanctuary AC. There's an upgrade to the projector that's going to happen in here that's going to really benefit especially the churches that meet in here on Sunday. There are four churches total, including us, that use this build, this facility. And so that's a $30,000 project into the technology of the space that we're going to rework the wheelchair entrance. Right now, it's not functioning. There should be access for people, for strollers, wheelchairs, for to be able to get into direct access into this sanctuary. That's a $10,000 project. And then we're giving a facelift to the chapel for our students and for workshop. That's $10,000. So $130,000. Again, we're asking you to raise $40,000 with us. Two of the churches that meet here, Catalyst Church and Anchor Church, are each also giving $10,000, right? How great is that? That they're investing in this space, even though they're not obligated to do so. So shout out to Catalyst Church and to Anchor Church for your generosity. So they're giving $20,000, we're gonna raise $40,000, and we're gonna spend $70,000. I think that's a good plan. And I hope that you'll join me in it. I hope that you'll meet me in it. We like to put these slides up. This is our updated. I'll circle back. We do this at the end of every quarter. We didn't get to it at the end of last year because of the business meeting. But this is our updated missions support list. So these are checks that we send every month. To either a missionary or a missions organization. There's a new one right there in the middle that says Pakistan that we've picked up, a missionary that's doing some incredible work there. And so she channeled to Brazil for Christ. Come on, is up there. About two-thirds of the way down. That's the mission trip that we're going to be doing this year. And so we're writing those checks every month to get missions money. 100% of missions money goes back out. And then the next slide that's going to come up. Come on, last year was an incredible year of generosity, right? The last quarter, look at that. Each quarter, January to March is usually a little bit slow, but look at each of those other quarters, how we blew right past our giving goals because of the generosity in this room. And so we're believing that this year is going to be no different, that we're going to keep pacing for generosity because we believe that your heart is just like our heart, that you're inspired to give yourself to this work, to give sacrificially to the sacred work of building Jesus' church. All right, let's dig into some of these questions. There's a lot of thoughts and ideas that people have about tithing. Tithing's it's an ancient word, and so sometimes it's hard to connect with sometimes the language of the Bible. And so let me just talk a little bit about these. We'll dig into it and get as far as we can. The first one is the idea of a portion. Why do we assign a percentage to this aspect of our giving? Why do we assign a percentage to this part of our practice of generosity, of giving sacrificially to the sacred work of Jesus? Well, part of it is because here in Matthew 23:23, we see Jesus says, "What sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb garden, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. You should tithe, but do not neglect the more important things." Jesus was constantly challenging the religious leaders of his day to stop making false choices. That so many times they were pitting one thing against another when Jesus was saying, no, we're supposed to be doing all of these things. That our lives are big enough, there's room in our hearts enough to give ourselves to the practice of giving and then also this idea of virtues and values. That right here in Jesus' own words, he says, hey, this is still an important part of being God's child. You know, as we look back into the Old Testament, you find that this practice of tithing, it predates the Mosaic Law. You see, Abraham, when he went to rescue Lot and their family, when he came back from the spoils of war, that they gave 10% of all that they had to Melchizedek, the priest of Salem. You see this practice that's moving throughout the Old Testament like a thread, and I believe you see it weaving right into the New Testament as well. The word tithe, this ancient word, literally means, if we were to translate it exactly, it means a tenth part. It means a tenth part. For us, we practice that. For our family, a tenth part of our gross annual income. It's important that we understand that God throughout time has always made a way for us to practice generosity. He's always made a way to call us into this experience of everything that we have not being for us. This idea of a percentage being set aside for other people. And I like that it's a percentage. I'm going to read out of Mark 12, 41 to 44, because I think this idea of percentage matters. It says, Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched the crowd drop in their money. I love this, right? This is one of my favorite verses in the Bible. I don't look at giving. People come up and talk to me about their giving like I know and say, I don't look at your giving. That's a function of our elected elders. They look at that. I don't know who gives what in this church. But every now and again, I read this and go, maybe Jesus was on something to hear, right? Maybe I'm right. He was watching people get. How uncomfortable would that make you feel, right? It makes me uncomfortable just talking about it. He sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched the crowd. He's right. He's watching them and he's watching what they put in and he's looking back up at them. So many rich people came and put in large amounts, and then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins. Jesus called his disciples and said to them, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. So good, isn't it? See, he's not just watching what people are giving, then he gives public commentary on it. So good, so good. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus, right? But she, poor as she is, has given everything that she had to live on. I think that one of the reasons why this idea of a tenth part, a percentage, is at the heart, at the center of what I would say is Christian stewardship is because Jesus knows a percentage, it just levels the playing field, right? It levels the playing field. Whether someone is wealthy or whether someone is under-resourced, it just puts everybody on equal footing as far as what we're supposed to set aside for the sake of others. He measures the gift, this is important, by the amount of the sacrifice, not the amount of the gift itself. It's powerful, isn't it? Because if you're not careful, you can also slip into this mindset and mentality of this idea of saying, what little I have, it won't matter. Can we just agree that what is given ultimately is not the impact? The impact is God is shaping our hearts to be like him, right? And it is the idea of doing something sacrificially that changes you, that changes me. The portion, I believe it's still a tenth part even today. Let's talk about the consequence. Now, I'm not going to read all of this. It's going to pop up onto the screen, Malachi 3, 7 to 10. But there's some really strong language in here. There's the term cursing is repeated multiple times. And sometimes when we read texts like this, it's off-putting to us. And I want to encourage you, it is fair that it's off-putting. Because sometimes there's language in the Bible that when we read it, we're like, that could have been written yesterday. Right? There's a timeless nature to it. But there are other texts in the Bible that they're confusing because it's an ancient language written to an ancient people who lived in ancient times, who practiced ancient customs, cultural norms. And so when you read this idea of cursing and devouring, I would say this is one of those texts that sometimes escapes us a little bit because it was written a long time ago. I think this is the heart of what God is saying when we read these verses. He's saying that, hey, when we do things his way, there's always going to be more. When we do things our way, it's always going to be less. Right? If I were to modernize this text, I would say, God is saying to you and me lovingly that when we do things his way, there's always more. And that when we do our things, there's always going to be less. Sometimes this idea, this relationship that we have with God, we try to understand it through math. And sometimes God says to us, the kingdom of heaven is not limited by the earthly understanding and the earthly concept of math. Listen to this. This quote comes out of a book called The Blessed Life. Some of the things in this book I agree with, some I don't, right? You got to learn to do that with things that you read. Take the things that you support and leave the other things behind. But let me share with you a couple of quotes here. It says, being blessed means having supernatural power working for you. By contrast, being cursed means having supernatural power working against you, right? It's this idea of God saying he calls us into obedience because he's trying to help us to experience this. When we do things his way, there's more. And when we do things our way, there's less. And that's not just with money. Can we agree on that? There's just this idea of abundance that we experience in this life when we give ourselves to the ways of God. This is the other part. This is important. The principle of the first fruits is very, very powerful. Right? He writes, I've heard it said that any first thing given is never lost, and any first thing not given is always lost. In other words, what we give to God, we don't lose because God redeems it for us. But what we withhold from God, we will always lose. Jesus shows this for us, echoes this principle when he said, whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it, right? Sometimes there's a backwardness to the kingdom of heaven. When our kids were growing up and we were teaching and talking to them about the principle of tithing, we often said to them, hey, 90% with God's favor is always going to be more than 100% without, right? 90% with God's favor is always going to amount to more, not because of math, but because of the sovereignty of God. 10% less is less in that moment, right? When we're setting aside 10%, it feels like I have less than I started. And this is the tension that comes in, right, for Christianity. So many times God calls us into a place of faith that sometimes our human mind and our earthly intellect has a hard time grasping. It's hard for us to see 90% as more because it's always less than every other situation. But God says that's not the case with this. When we were teaching our kids about giving and tithing, we taught them that tithing ultimately is about redemption. It's about redeeming what remains with that first gift that we set aside. Now, these might be new concepts for you. I get that. And so my encouragement to you, just like what we were talking about with worship, is dipping your toe into the water of worship, is being willing to just dip your toe in the water with some of these biblical ideas and some of these biblical concepts. It might seem to you just crazy to operate and live your life this way. And so our invitation to you is come and see. For many of us who have been walking and living this way for many years, there is a consequence. There's always a consequence. There's always a result when it comes to obedience. It's what becomes of what remains that ultimately matters. You with me? It's what becomes of what remains that ultimately matters. All right, we're going to make it. The next one is this. Somebody say the priority. The priority. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2 reads this way. Now, regarding your question about the money being collected for God's people in Jerusalem, you should follow the same procedure I gave to the churches in Galatia. On the first day of each week, you should each put aside a portion of the money you have earned, and don't wait until I get there and then try to connect it all at once. We remember, right, the reason why the books of the Bible are named the way that they are for most of them, some are named because of the author that wrote them, right? 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jude. Some are written for the person that it's written to, like 1st and 2nd Timothy. Paul's writing them to his young protege. He's raising him up, teaching him. He's going to pass the baton, right? But then we have these books that are Thessalonians, you're like, what on earth does that come from? Galatians, Philippians, all of these represent cities, Philippi, Thessalonica, Ephesus. This is because Paul doesn't just write to people. Paul's writing to churches, just like this, communities and congregations of people who have come together because the gospel has stirred their heart, and now they're giving themselves to the work of building his church. And so here we see Paul writing to the church of Corinth, and he's saying to them, hey, there is a practice that you should share together as a church community, is that each of you should bring the part that you have set aside for the work of building God's church. 2 weeks ago, I introduced you to this phrase that all of us, right, should have a church that we call home. And when we have a church that we call home, we should give to that church and through that church, right? We should give to that church and we should give through that church, meaning that we should give to that church so that church could continue to do the work of the ministry in that city. But then we give through that church because that church should be supporting just as we do through our missions fund. And here we see Paul talking. Here he is to this congregation, probably not too much different than we are here tonight. And he's saying, hey, don't forget this practice at your weekly gathering to set something aside. Listen to these verses in Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. It says, honor the Lord with your wealth. Listen to what he says. And with the best part of everything you produce. And then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with good wine. Again, ancient language for an ancient people of an ancient times. What is Solomon writing here about honoring the Lord with our wealth? He's using the language of prospering of his day. Maybe we could go as far to say that he's echoing the same sentiment that Malachi prophesied about. When we do things God's way, there's always more. And when we do things our way, there's always less. I love in Matthew 6, 33, it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. There's something about this Christian life that asks us to let go of some of our control. It's hard for us, right? And our human experience, for some of us, if you're your personality is like mine. Not being in control is difficult. But Christ challenges us to wrestle with that part of our humanity. There's times where he asks us to just let go of some things and to put our trust in him. Our gift does not rise to the standard of a tithe until the sentiment of the heart from which it comes crosses the threshold of a sacred sacrifice and gladness. Right? I'm wrapping up with that because if you do everything because you feel like it's a rule to follow, then even if the math works, you're checking the tithe box, if your heart isn't giving it in gladness, then we've not yet stepped into this part of a life of a Christian steward. There's something inside of me that is supposed to stir with excitement at the opportunity that I have to share my life, especially my financial life, with other people. There's a gladness that is supposed to fill my heart when I recognize that I have the opportunity to walk in God's ways. Now, you might get to the end of this series and say, Fred, I'm still not convinced that it's for today. And what I would say is that's okay. We make room for disagreement here at City Life Church. But my press to you, my challenge to you is whatever percentage you end up putting in that blank, then my challenge to you is one, that there should be one there and that you should feel it, right? That there should be an outflow of generosity from your life that is sacrificial. So even if at the end of this series that my presentation hasn't been convincing to say biblical tithe, that you believe that tithing is a biblical principle for today, then I would say then you live a life that expresses sacrificial generosity in a different way. But make sure that it is sacrificial and make sure that it's generous and make sure that it is accompanied by the sentiment of gladness in your heart to share your resources with others. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. How are you pronouncing Christian stewardship? By the way you're managing your household finances. Let me say it again. How are you pronouncing Christian stewardship? By the way you are managing your household finances. Am I giving sacrificially to the sacred work of building Jesus' church to and through the church that you call home? There's a verse in Psalm 24:1 that's a sentiment that's echoed all throughout Scripture. And it says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So something shifts in us when we look at everything that we have and we stop looking at everything that we have as if we have it. Something shifts in us when we look at everything that's in our possession and under our authority as belonging to Him, and that He has entrusted it to us to use it in a way that He desires. You with me? It's the same as if when you're living in your house or when you're house sitting for someone else. It's the same as when you're driving your car or when you've borrowed someone else's. You tracking with me? It's the same as, here we go, when you're parenting your kids or when you're watching someone else's for them, right? There is a change of perspective. There is a shift in mentality when I remember that what I am responsible for does not belong to me. Something shifts inside of us when we make that pivot with everything that we have. All that I own in the end is not mine. It's His. And He's entrusted it to me to care for it, to use it, for some of it to enjoy. Absolutely. But even then, it's because God commands it. Even then, He relishes in the enjoyment, right, of this life that we can share. May it be that always part of our conversation that we find ourselves saying, God, what do you want me to do with this that belongs to you? Stand with me. Father, as we step back into this moment of worship, may it be that someone here tonight, maybe for the first time, would not just believe something about you, but would feel something for you. Then may it be that during this last song that somebody in this room, somebody watching at home has been seeing this promo for this trip to Brazil through Channel to Brazil for Christ and has been finding every reason to say no. Maybe it's going to be in this song. They're going to find a reason to say yes. Find a reason to say yes. Maybe there's a young person in this room, just like I was a long time ago, running from you, raised in a Christian home, pretending to be one person when they're in church, but someone else when they're with their friends. That maybe tonight's the night that they're going to be all in for you, Jesus. And they're going to stop running, and they're going to start chasing. They're going to stop running. They're going to stop running from the things of God and start chasing the things of God. In Jesus' name, come on, let's worship together.